Welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to welcome you today to our Learning Directly webinar in partnership with our long-standing alliance with Stephan Trommel and his team at the ILO and the Global Business Disability Network. I wanted to thank immediately EY for so generously hosting this. And in terms of putting today's discussion in context, just a reminder, Business Disability International, this not-for-profit social enterprise, was set up by Barclays, GSK, and Infosys to mobilize global business behind the economic and social inclusion of the more than 1 billion people with disabilities worldwide. And so our job is to help these multinational corporations to deliver the consistent best practice, which goes beyond compliance, because we know that only best practice actually benefits both the business and people with disabilities. Our vision is shaped by our charter, which sets out how to make it easier for every part of the business to get it right, whether it's technology, procurement, property, customer care, new product development, communications, HR, and so on. This guide that we're celebrating today is grounded in more than 30 years of experience enabling business to engage behind this agenda, because we've learned that the only way to challenge deep-rooted stereotypes and the only way to truly energize the business to deliver this culture and business improvement change is by bringing business leaders and disabled people together. We call it the face-to-face strategy, or perhaps human-to-human. This guide provides the practical tips on how to turn the new conversations that result to mutual benefit. The why really must be simple in a way. It's the only way for any business to really understand what happens when they're trying to get it right for disabled and older customers, for colleagues and potential colleagues. The business case, well, we could talk about enhanced customer experience, new product development, the quality of the built environment improving, enhanced productivity, talent acquisition. It goes on and on. But the shorthand for us in terms of today is that business benefits directly when it learns directly. Disabled people benefit, the societies and the global economies in which we live and work benefit. Everybody wins. So I'm particularly pleased today that Paulette Cohen from our founder Barclays is here to later on share their experience, and particularly pleased as well that our colleague Kate Nash is able to join us, not just in her capacity as the author of this guide, but I think probably as the world's leading authority are learning directly from disabled employee networks and from colleagues, and of course is the founder of Purple Space. So Kate, over to you. Why were you so keen to help us to publish this guide on learning directly?
Susan, thank you very much indeed. And it's a real pleasure to be able to join you all today. I wish I could see you, but we live in a virtual world, so really pleased to join you at this launch. I think really what I want to do is to talk a little bit about some of the methodologies. And I know in advance of that, Susan, there's some offerings you want around the scale of disability as it affects industry. But I think really what we're seeing is a real sea change in how businesses are starting to notice the fantastic talent that they often already employ. Broadly speaking, if you look across the world, you see in any jurisdiction that broadly companies will have about 10% of their own people will have a disability. But of course, the definition of disability varies across the world, and therefore it's proper that companies are looking to recruit more disabled talent and to get, particularly people with significant impairments into work. You know, all businesses have that challenge. So I want to focus a little bit on the sea change. Is that what you'd like me to do first, Susan, before I hand back to you around the scale of disability? In terms of sea change, I think one of the things that we ought to always remember is what I call the universal truth about change. So we know as individuals, as humans, that when we change things, whether it's people, individual people, whether that's teams, whether it's organizations or indeed governments, we can only do that when we make it easier for them to do so. You can't actually force change at a micro level. If you think about, for example, individuals, your loved ones, your partners, etc., you can't force them to change their behaviours. All you can do is to change your own behaviour in terms of how that iteration works. So if you think about D&I, bring it back to diversity, inclusion. When you're driving large change programs, we can't force people to change their behaviour. All we can do is to make it easier for them to do so. And in this example, things like delivering tools and know-how, describing what happens when we don't learn from disabled people, and really about painting a picture about the financial return on investment if you learn directly from your own people, whether that's in terms of employment or indeed the customer piece. For those of you who can see the slide there, I'm talking about a little bit about Nothing About Us Without Us, which is a strapline that we see from many disabled people and disability groups across the world. And as we know, it's an old phrase that's used by many disabled people within the disabled persons movement. It was coined, certainly in the UK, for example, in the mid-70s, Nothing About Us Without Us, and refers really to the common practice of excluding disabled people from key discussions about the things that really impact on our lives. And that includes, of course, access to basic health care or social care, or indeed the public transport system or housing, et cetera, but it includes, obviously, the need to access the workplace and how we secure employment, et cetera. And what we are seeing, again, across the globe, we're starting to see a real sea change in how businesses choose deliberately to improve their employment practices and access to goods and services. And the majority of those that are doing it well are those companies who look to learn from their own disabled people and their customers and potential customers. I think thirdly, I talk about riddling the system. I think what I mean by this, and certainly we see that in our BDI founding partners, is that, you know, many of you will be wearing different hats. You'll be placed in different places within the business. You have different roles in helping either disabled people to get entry jobs, or you might be involved in helping with mature hires, or you may be helping to deliver an improved workplace adjustment process, or you may be heading up a network, et cetera, et cetera. There's no silver bullet. As we know, there's no silver bullet in this. And so improving workplace policy and culture to recruit more disabled people or retain more disabled people or sell more products requires organizations to think systematically and systemically about how they deliver change. And what I would call riddling the system, and why I know Susan, you at BDI are keen to create the Learning Directly From movement, and we hope that this tool will help. I think lastly, before I hand back to you, Susan, very quickly around the methodologies, because it would be good if you could give us the sense of scale before I come back into the methodologies. I think lastly, it's about, as we know, taking risks. So, and again, what I mean by that, well, many of us will work in companies who have chosen to sometimes work to instinct. And again, what do I mean by that? So, for example, we see now a lot of companies, global companies, who are using disabled actors, for example, in their advertisements when they're selling products. You know, one example of this in the UK, for example, in 2012 Olympics, we saw, for example, Channel 4 in its advertisement around Superhuman adverts. They use a very highly controversial clip around disabled athletes. And we know in terms of their return on investment to their ads that we saw a huge peak of people wanting to engage with the Olympics simply because they took a risk. And I think, you know, we're seeing increasingly companies, although they want to have well thought through business case for delivering change, some of this is about taking a little bit of risk based on what we know around the scale of disability. So I'm going to come back to some of the methodologies, as I know you want to hear. But Susan, I wonder if you could just give us something about scale before I do that.
Okay, well, I think I just wanted to stress that from a corporate perspective, the fact that in many countries the statistics are either very difficult to get or seem unhelpful and almost contradictory on occasion, is that from a best practice perspective, what global companies need to hold on to is the fact that between 15 and 20% of the population of any country will have a disability. And certainly what we've found, and those of you that can see the workforce profile that we've done, is that in most large organizations, you can expect to have between 10 and 12% of your population will have a disability, remembering that some 80% of disabled people have non-visible impairments, and remembering that actually we are talking about a wide range of people, from a dyslexic graduate through to someone who, you know, more stereotypically using a wheelchair or others. And that one number that I think is particularly important from both the customer perspective and the employment front is that one in three people aged 50 to 64 will have a disability. They may well never describe themselves as disabled, but as they age, they find it more difficult to hear on the phone or more difficult to read small print, or if they just don't like climbing those stairs. I think what we've learned is you just don't make assumptions about people anymore. The question is, what could we do if we had a little bit more disability expertise and if we were listening to our people and our customers, which would make it easier for everyone to contribute to the business? And, of course, we are seeing data now in terms of the digital phenomenon that we're witnessing, showing that some 70% of people with disabilities are actively clicking away from inaccessible or just too clunky websites, finding themselves so discouraged by trying to purchase goods and services online that they're constantly looking for a more accessible provider. I think if you're looking for data to persuade your organizations to engage, it's that kind of insight that is more important than worrying about statistics at the national level. If 10% of your workforce is not dyslexic, well, it might be a bit higher, it might be a bit lower, but the question is, have you asked them what you could do that would make it easier for them to realize their potential in your organization? And so, Kate, you were going to talk a bit now about some of the practical examples of what companies can do as they set out to learn directly from their colleagues, potential colleagues, and from customers.
Yeah.
If you could take us through some of the case studies and the tips and so on that we've captured in the guide.
Sure. Susan, thank you for that. So I'm going to talk now, put about 10 minutes or so, about what we call making it real. So some of the things that we heard about when we drew on the examples of our three founding members, so Barclays and Infosys and GSK. So some of the things that we're seeing that they do in terms of learning directly from their people. Now, the guide, which you should all have had, and if you haven't, then I know the team at BDI will be really keen to make sure that you get either a soft copy or a hard copy, whatever works for you. And it's chock full. And what I'm going to do is just give you a small selection of some of the things that you can do to support your business to learn directly from its own disabled people or indeed its customers. The first is around employee resource groups or networks. Now, what we see when we look at any company, all companies will, you know, talk about these groupings of individuals slightly differently. So, you know, you often in the UK hear the language of networks or special interest groups. In the USA and parts of the Far East and the Middle East, you'll talk about employee resource groups or BRGs, business resource groups, all very slightly different. But broadly, they're groupings of individuals who either have a disability themselves or are individuals who will, through the course of their work, be impacted on disability. So, of course, that might include line managers who want to do differently and better in supporting their own people to secure workplace adjustments. It might include parents of children who have a disability, or indeed individuals who have caring responsibilities for older parents. So the types of individuals that gravitate to an ever-increasing population of disabled employee networks or resource groups is vast. Now, again, we've seen in the work of Purpose Space as well as BDI that there are probably about many different structures as there are networks. And there's no silver bullet in this. There's no one hard and fast way. But certainly, if companies are able to stimulate and nurture and encourage the networking of disabled people and allies or champions of their disabled talent, you start to see ways in which there can be what I would call a better interaction and exchange between different parts of the business and that network. So what do I mean by that? So for example, you have different individuals within a business that will have a functional responsibility for ensuring that disability is mainstreamed. So that could be the recruitment processes, it could be the ICT delivery, it could be facilities, it could be products and services, it could be human resources, etc., etc. So lots of individuals with different functional responsibilities for ensuring that disability is part of their brief. But, you know, we're all busy people, and sometimes that means that individuals, you know, we have to, I think, accept that, you know, most people are coming from the right place, but they will sometimes forget to ensure that they are perhaps as inclusive as they could be around their, how they roll out best practice. But if you can start to use your resource groups really as a touch base, or routinely consulting with that group of individuals in how to better improve some of the processes, the systems, the policies, the practices, the procedures, can often work to mutual advantage, because one, it helps, of course, the business to do differently and better, but it actually signals, it creates very strong signals that you're serious in wanting to engage and hear sometimes the uncomfortable truths about how you may be inadvertently excluding people of difference. So, you know, one of the things that came through very, very clearly in the work we did in creating the guide, partly from our founding members but others, is if you have a network, use it, plunder it, make sure that you are well connected with that network, but equally you'll look to set one up if needs must. Surveys. We heard again and again how employers and companies are using surveys routinely. That may be engagement surveys, the kind of pulse surveys where a company will have an annual survey to see how well it is engaging with its own people. And sometimes having one or two specific questions about how disabled people are faring in that process can be really advantageous. So certainly making sure that you are befriending, I think, those individuals who are responsible for delivering the routine annual survey is important. I want to mention a little bit listening groups. Susan, I know you've got great experience in this. You may want to refer to it later. But if a company doesn't have maybe a formal disability network or resource groups, we are seeing particularly senior executives, whether it's at chief exec level or more likely to be the diversity or the disability senior executive sponsor or champion, if they're able to free up a little bit of their time once or maybe twice a year to roll out what we call listening groups, where they avail their time, they put the message out that they want to hear directly from their own people. They may have a small informal gathering, but they make the big ask. What I mean by that is they openly invite information and feedback about where the organisation is falling down around including its disabled talent, and where this can be augmented and supplemented with the resource groups, etc. It just provides a really good opportunity, I think, for senior executives to learn at first hand, of course, what it's doing well, but often more importantly, the uncomfortable truth, speaking truth to power. You know, we see that a lot again and again in the listening group. What else? Well, we saw the good use of mystery shopping and user testing. So, you certainly see from Barclays, they do this routinely, but whenever there's a new product or a new service that is coming off the stock, where that particular part of the business is able to use mystery shopping exercises around product delivery, learning directly from their own disabled people or indeed through customers, it can be incredibly important. We see that obviously in GSK, where they are forever involved, of course, in packaging and having to test the usability of different products. But certainly using mystery shopping exercises is incredibly important. And I think, you know, again, we've talked about named senior champion when it comes to listening groups. Having your named senior champions across all of the functional responsible areas is incredibly important. So I'll pause there, Susan. I know you're looking at your watch there. I don't want to be overly greedy with time, but some thoughts you might want to have.
Well, I just wanted to really stress the importance of senior players being seen to be part of this, because, of course, while you'll have enormous goodwill across the organization, given most people that work for you will either be disabled themselves or close to someone who is. There'll be someone in their family or friend circle. And so they'll welcome the suggestion that the company wants to improve its performance in this area. I think the importance of having a senior champion can't be underestimated, because of course people with disabilities will need the reassurance that if they do come forward with proposals to improve the way things are done, one, that it's not a risk to them personally, because they can see that such proposals are actively welcomed by senior players who are committed to doing better. And where we see the best practice really starting to come in is when companies are routinely saying, what can we do to make it easier for everyone to do their job? What can we do to make it easier for every customer to come through? And just making sure that people with disabilities are routinely consulted in that problem-solving process, removing those particular obstacles, but that the end game is that actually we're making it easier for everyone. And so I think in terms of the specifics that we've got in the guide.
Yes. Susan, if I may, I think particularly in relation to how you use your senior champions, two things that we're seeing lots of companies now do is to set up very specific focus groups around the testing of new products or services. So, for example, you know, when running focus groups to test a new product or a new service, etc., I think organisations now are routinely looking to use the services of disabled facilitators themselves. So, you know, it's well documented, as we know, that when you're conducting research, people are much more likely to share difficult information or sensitive information, I should say, when there's a degree of empathy from the researcher or when the individual actually identifies with the researcher. So again, one of the things that is coming through again and again is companies willing to invest in disabled researchers and disabled facilitators where they can really ask the right question and in the right way of individuals who might join into focus groups. You know, often, again, we see companies hosting what we call speed dating events or, you know, other interactive ways of bringing together those individuals who are responsible for product and service design, as well as disabled customers or potential customers. And some companies setting up award schemes, for example, to enable their colleagues who may come up with the best ideas for improving products and services to be awarded appropriately for their imagination, for their creativity, for their, you know, their willingness really to go to the extra mile to include those individuals. I think also your thoughts around senior executives. Again, we're seeing again and again senior executives having a really important impact on the way in which a company develops its narrative and its communication. So, for example, one of the tips in the guide is profiling, for example, one good story a month. So, you know, whether it's using the organization's global communications machine or its channel or by encouraging, for example, the disability network to create its own communication channels, it's really, you know, just the practice to maybe highlight the one good story a month, for example, or the one good story every couple of months that illustrates how the business has performed better as a direct result of learning from its own disabled employees. and having, you know, helping the communications team really to have the means and the confidence to source out those positive stories from disabled employees and customers. You know, from time to time we do talk to companies who may feel that there are no good news stories, but actually the opposite is true. There's often some really, really good stories. So you need a bit of energy, a bit of time, a bit of consideration to go out and seek the brilliant stories about retaining and attracting disabled talent, as well as serving customers better. So there's a few thoughts. I know we want to come to Paulette and hear a little bit about Barclays, but shall I hand back to you, Susan, quickly, just in case there's something you want to emphasise before we hand over to Paulette?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, we're doing this workshop in partnership with EY, and if you look at the role and the impact of someone like Ian Wilkie, who has driven so much change across the organization, whereas I say the long-term goal is how do we make it easier for everyone? But Ian has done things like enabled colleagues with a range of impairments to come together, a stammering network, a dyslexia network, mental health network, all looking at very particular obstacles which the company needs to address so that inclusion can be delivered in the long run. So, you know, we see leaders doing things in very different ways in different companies, but there can be no doubt that the impact is there when leaders step up to the mark. And so I think now we're going to just hear something from Paulette Cohen, who has been talking, will be talking to us in particular about the This Is Me campaign, but also I know has done so much since the bank helped to set up the world's first national business disability network in the UK way back when, in the early 90s. But Paulette was most certainly not there way back then. Paulette, tell us what you're up to now.
Thank you, Susan, and good morning to everyone, or good afternoon or evening, depending on where you are across the globe. Susan and Kate, thank you very much for this opportunity. It's always a privilege to talk about some of the work that we've been doing, but I do just want to preface that with acknowledging that we at Barclays very much, to coin a cliche, feel we're very much on a journey. So, I'm delighted to share where we are at this particular point with one or two of our initiatives, but fully recognise that there is so much further to go. And I'm also going to try and pick up just a little bit on some of the things that have been said and see if I can reinforce some of those. And to kick off, reflect your point, Susan, about how important listening to and learning from our colleagues with disabilities is for all of the business, because it affects every part of the business, and that's how we see it at Barclays. Also, to Kate, your point about sharing a story every month, I just want to open with something that happened last week, if I may, but I do want to reinforce that this isn't the only time of year that we do something. It is something that we try and keep the messaging up throughout the year. But I was asked to say why does Barclays see this as important, and I think last week for me really illustrates that for Barclays. So Barclays has five key diversity and inclusion campaigns and areas of focus during the year, and last week focused on International Day of Persons with Disabilities, and therefore the whole business was alert to the fact that this UN Day is important to us, important to our colleagues, and important to our customers. We highlighted a number of initiatives, and I believe that some of those initiatives really demonstrate why Barclays feels that it's important to listen to and learn from people with disabilities. And I'll just take you very briefly through 3 days. On Wednesday, and I was had the privilege of being with Kate and Purple Space on Wednesday, we piloted a webinar at Barclays that the focus of this webinar was trying to build disability confidence within the business, in particular on how we can support our line managers. And we want our line managers to be able to open up that conversation, to listen to their colleagues with disabilities, to learn from them, to be able to provide the very best support that they can, and also leverage the resources that we have within the business. And this is crucial to us if we're going to harness the talents and skills of all of our colleagues, especially those with a disability. On Thursday, we then ran what we called a global relay of video conferencing, and starting in the morning, running through the day, we connected with our colleagues, and in particular with our colleagues' networks. Our in Barclays, the disability network is called REACH, and we connected with our networks around the globe and encouraged people to tell their own stories about their experience of disability, but most significantly talking about how they feel they can bring their whole selves to work and why it's really important that they share their stories and people can have the opportunity to listen to those stories and learn about the experiences of our colleagues with disabilities. So that was really interesting, seeing people in Tokyo, in Singapore, in New York, in Glasgow, across the UK, talking about their own experiences. And then on Friday, and I think this is to the point that was made earlier on about engaging all parts of the business, our recruitment teams, our resourcing teams, launched a brand new employability toolkit that was focused on opening up opportunities for people with disabilities to get into work. And this toolkit has actually been developed listening to and learning from our colleagues, in particular some of our apprentices who have a disability. And as a result of that, we've developed a new internship for people with mental health challenges. Now, it's very much a pilot, and it will only be developed by listening to and learning from the experiences of those individuals. And it's crucial to Barclays that we do this because we want to recruit the very best talent to the business, and those people will have to understand and be able to reflect our customer base. And to your point, Susan, earlier on, it's really important that there's a business imperative to this, as well as it being the right thing for us to do. So I think to reiterate my point, we're very much on a journey with that. And I just thought last week captured why Barclays really believes that this is important. I genuinely think that we only believe that by learning from our colleagues with disabilities can we be the most accessible and inclusive business that we can be, and reflect the needs of both our customers and our colleagues. But to the point that was made earlier on, develop the solutions that work for everyone, not the few. But I was specifically asked to focus on one example, and I would just like to pick up on This Is Me and the middle part of what I was saying about telling stories. Because this has really shaped Barclays, the way we look at the disability agenda and the way that we engage our colleagues in this agenda. And I'm sure there might be one or two people on this initiative, on this webinar, who may have heard of This Is Me or This Is Me in the City. But in summary, it was an initiative that was started in 2013, actually by the members of Barclays Employee Disability Network. So it came from our colleagues, and it's through them that they're influencing the way we see things as a business. And this campaign was built around people with disabilities sharing their own stories, initially with the aim to raise awareness around mental health and wellness. So the goal to start off with was to try and break the culture of silence that surrounds the challenging subject of mental health, also to tackle the lack of understanding that people have, but also to encourage colleagues to feel that they can actually speak out and have a conversation about their mental health condition. So if this webinar is about listening to and learning from colleagues, This Is Me really epitomizes that. And it started off with just 9 colleagues who have over the years been described as brave about sharing their own stories. But the stories are very personal. It's about the individual as a whole, not just focusing on their disability, but much more on their ability as well. And it reflects their own lives and their own personal experiences. And these were captured as films, as blogs. People spoke about them at events. They were posted on a community site that we developed. And we've seen this grow like Topsy. That's a British phrase, I think. But it's really grown. And we now have around, by the end of last week, over 200 people who will have told their story. I think one of the really interesting things was it's originally started focusing on mental health and wellness. But in 2015, the wider disability community within Barclays said, we want to tell our stories too. We want people to listen to our experiences and learn from those experiences. So the campaign was broadened out to cover the whole of the disability agenda. And as of last week, we were able to share stories that reflected all aspects of the disability agenda, from mental health and wellness through to physical impairments and non-visible disabilities. We're also, interestingly, based on some of what was said, broadening this out to reflect line managers' experiences as well of managing and leading and supporting people with disabilities, and also those of peers or champions and those impacted by disability. So the concept has really has got traction within the business, and people want to tell their stories and people are learning from those stories. They reflect all parts of the business, but more significantly, and I think to the point that both Kate and Susan have made about senior leadership, it now reflects all levels of the business. And I know that some of the other organisations, I'll touch on this in a second, who've picked up on This Is Me, have also taken this on board. It's really important that this does reflect all levels of the business. Now, wasn't able to embed this into this webinar, but if you went onto barclays.com, onto the news page, it's very easy, barclays.com news, you can link through to the latest film that Barclays has produced. I'm really, really impressed to see how our colleagues have picked this up, and the four stories that you see in that film reflect all parts of the business and all levels. So you have Michelle, who's a senior leader in HR at managing director level, talking about what it's like to lead at that level with a hearing impairment and how she thought it might really affect her career, but it hasn't. There's a story from Angela, who's one of our apprentices based in a branch in London, but who has a degenerative back condition. And she talks about some of the adjustments that have been made and how she wasn't afraid to ask for support. And likewise, Chris, who's in Barclaycard, who was diagnosed with depression 13 years ago, but talks about how important it is not to be scared to talk about your condition. And then we have Sally, who is the most senior woman within Barclays and globally leads our internal audit function, who talks quite openly about the impact on her family and having to take a month off through stress, and how she reached out and asked for support as well. And I think all of these people are telling their stories so the bank can learn from their experiences. And what we're seeing is that people are much more willing and open to ask for support. And I think to Kate's point about surveys, we can track this. We do have a colleague engagement survey. And as a result of This Is Me, we've seen almost a doubling of people who are comfortable now in disclosing that they have a disability. We've seen a real shift in the culture and tone of the organisation, encouraging people to feel that they can bring their whole selves to work dynamically, to ask for the adjustments that they need. We've seen an increase in the take-up of support services, and I know some of our multinational partners actually track this more so than we do, but can see this as a real impact of campaigns such as this. And we have tangibly seen people returning to work successfully, more people returning to work successfully after time off with a mental health related illness. So we're starting to see the tangible results of a campaign like this, of listening to our colleagues and being able to provide the vehicles for their voices to be heard. And we shared this last year at an event in London run by the Lord Mayor's Appeal, and they picked up the campaign, and it's become This Is Me in the City, which relates to businesses within London. And in the space of a year, 75 companies have now registered their support. 25 are already running This Is Me campaigns with colleagues telling their stories. The campaign This Is Me in the City has the goal to double the number of companies involved by the end of 2017 and reach 1 million colleagues through that. And Barclays has also seen interest in Singapore, New York and Johannesburg to roll out This Is Me there as well. So just to wrap up, I just want to sum up some of our key learnings. Firstly, storytelling is an extraordinarily powerful vehicle to allow our colleagues to tell their story, to talk about their experiences, and it engages people in that process and therefore encourages people to listen. It focuses on real people, real stories, real experiences, and therefore real learnings. It's genuinely inclusive. People want to be involved, and although I've been involved in this for too long, I've been overwhelmed by the number of people who are open to telling their story and being part of this campaign. You can really see the business benefiting from this, to Susan's point earlier on. The richness of experience that our colleagues bring and share enables us to learn from that experience, to retain the talent within the organisation, and ultimately to have a happier and more productive workforce as well. And to have a workforce that understands our customer base, which is, as I said earlier, particularly important. I think the point about senior leadership owning an initiative like this is particularly significant. In Barclays, we have a senior executive sponsor who does all the things that Kate and Susan have both talked about. But I think a very senior executive last week told their story at a colleague network event, and their closing line was, please make sure this isn't the last time you involve me, call on me again. And I think it's that level of support that you need within a business. And finally, it's a long journey. You can't, as Susan said, you can't force change. You can only commit to this over time. And this is a long-term commitment that we've made. We've seen it grow over the years. To Kate's point about building wider support, we launched through our network something called Purple Reach Champions, which will be our wider champion base, people who are allies of the disability agenda. Within 48 hours, we had nearly 300 people register. So we know that the need is that the interest is out there and the support is there. And finally, to leave you with a quote from Sally in the who's in the film. She said, I can't tell you how many emails I've had from people thanking me for being brave to tell my story. I don't see it as that way. So perhaps what we need to do is to make sure that this isn't the place where you have to be brave anymore. This is just about business as usual. And I think that's our aspiration. We're on our way there, and This Is Me as part of that.
Thank you very much, Paulette. I think as I was listening to you, I was conscious I've had a number of organizations recently say, how do we build trust? How do we rebuild, in some instances, trust in terms of both the relationship with our people and our customers? And what you've described demonstrates that your people trust you with this information. And just a reminder that that does take time. But if you're seen to listen, if you're seen to then take those stories and share them and then act on what you learn, over time, that trust emerges in a way that you would probably never expect at the moment. So anything before we go to questions, Kate, from you?
No, beautiful example. The guide is chock full of fabulous examples from Barclays, from Infosys, and from GSK. What Paulette has touched on is a growing phenomenon where companies are noticing that using their own people to share stories of difference is one of the primary ways in which you can drive change. So, yeah, great stuff. I could talk about it all day, but I won't. So let's just open it up maybe to questions now. and to see whether there's anybody who would like to either give a comment or another example of how their organisation is driving change through learning directly, or indeed there might be something that you want us to expand on.
Brilliant. So, operator, if you could open the lines on the call for questions, please.
One thought I had, Susan, as I heard Paulette talk about the This Is Me campaign, and of course we see in different companies different types of examples of that. So, for example, Fujitsu, you know, big communications company, global company, they conceived of the Be Completely You campaign, which, you know, it's slightly similar, you know, differs in different ways, but, you know, it was a campaign designed to encourage, as Paulette says, people just to be who they are, you know, to bring their authentic selves to work and to, I suppose, encourage each other to, from time to time, ask for the adjustments that they might need. Again, another example was Shell, and again, another large global company that created a campaign called Be Yourself. And this was a viral campaign where they identified 15 differently disabled people from different parts of the world who shared their story of difference, and where the primary message was Be Yourself. And when they launched, they had the largest amount of hits on their intranet site that they have ever had. And interestingly, again, Paulette's story reminds me of this. It was from that point that they identified a good number of allies and champions who wanted to support their talent. So it's starting to happen. I think what I've enjoyed about the Barclays experience is how they do it routinely. We've got lots of companies on the call that are all doing slightly different things. EY have some great storytelling campaigns as well, but we're starting to see them grow like Topsy now.
And I think for me, one of the challenges for the senior players who are perhaps being asked for the first time to enter these conversations is to make sure that they've got some key messages and some stories to tell. And so the more they're actually in touch with people with disabilities and managers who've got experience of what it's like trying to deliver best practice and so on, the easier it is for them to then, as senior champions, to get it right in terms of how they allocate their time and what they say and do. And so, you know, Paulette, as I look back on the story in Barclays, I don't know how many times we're asked, how do you get senior players to support this kind of work? Have you got any insight into what on earth Barclays did that somehow got senior players for so long to just understand, to just get it in terms of why Barclays should be taking the steps that you've described? What tips would you give to people who are saying, how do I get my chief executive on board?
It's a great question, Susan. I think it goes two ways, really. I heard someone describe this last week as something that grows up from the grassroots, is supported from the top down, and driven by the people in the middle. And I think it's finding that triumvirate of support that creates the momentum that you need. And I'm sort of thinking that I'm on video conference here because I'm showing you with my hands, not that that really helps. But I think this is me was started at that grassroots level. There was no doubt about that. We have a senior executive for each of our diversity agendas. But it's about identifying the person who is passionate and committed and driven to support that agenda. So our executive champion is Ashok Vaswani. He's completely passionate about making us the most accessible and inclusive business in the FTSE 100. He recognizes the impact on our colleagues and our customers. So he sees it both with his heart and with his head. And I think that's part of it. So you've got the top bit, you've got the grassroots movement, but I think when you start to see line managers engaging and asking the questions, then you start to see that momentum. So I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I think the point that you made around trust is an absolutely valid one. And perhaps it's important to remember that senior leaders are all people at the end of the day. It's very easy to think that, you know, put them on a pedestal or think that, you know, they don't feel or think the same way as everyone else. And it's quite daunting to be able to stick your neck out and tell some of these stories. But when you see people doing that, and it's pertinent to you too, and the culture is such, eventually, that you feel as comfortable doing that as you want your colleagues to be, then you start to see that more people saying that they're prepared to have a voice as well. So all three levels, I would say.
That's interesting. And it makes for a fun graphic. I can imagine how you're waving your hands in the air.
Yeah, I am.
I think, you know, when I look at senior players that we've worked with, there's always a bit of anxiety that they're going to get it wrong in terms of what they say when they stand up. You know, will they be politically incorrect and so on? But I do think that it's only when they start to talk to their own people that they can relax on this and start to talk to their disabled customers and see that actually, if you're seen to be listening, most people would much rather you get it wrong, in effect, if you did, than not have the conversation at all. And that with having more and more conversations, people on all sides of the table just start to relax. And as you say, we're all human beings in this together. I know that getting some key messages in common can be really helpful. I've heard Ashok say, I don't know how many times, that actually his colleagues are also his customers. You know, that if... Yeah, that there's no kind of great divide here, and that if the bank is seen to be listening and driving the improvements you've described, then that works on both sides of that commercial alleged divide. I think, too, it's one of the reasons why we produce that little video, Labels Are So Old Brain, is to help people, at all levels, to communicate a fresh approach. 3 minutes of some very concise messages to try to set the case for both who we're talking about and what the new brain approach is really all about. And so I was just going to remind our colleagues on the line that Labels Are So Old Brain is on our website, and, you know, more than happy for you to get it out and use it. And that finally, perhaps, the message that it's best practice, not what local laws require, that's quite liberating, because it's up to the corporates now to define what best practice looks like that causes everyone to win. I used to say winning a balloon. I'm not sure if that's appropriate here. But that we're in a position now where, as global business starts to get a real sense of what disability confidence looks like, what they need to know, the barriers they need to remove, and how they do so, that we can start to move on in a really very exciting way. And I was really pleased that the video is now on the ILO network, which was very exciting, Stefan, and that EY have incorporated into their wonderful app, which is available, I think, to the entire world, as are both. And so I just wanted to remind us that that's there as well for us to use.
Susan, one thought also in terms of this storytelling phenomenon. Purple Space this week is about to launch Purple Stories, which is how you share your story of disability. You know, as Paulette reminds us, it's not about being brave, but sometimes you do need to learn a few tips about how you can share your story of difference in a way that doesn't just preserve or protect your brand, but actually enhances your brand as a person with difference. Boxes have invested significantly in its own people to help skill up individuals to share their story in very powerful ways. So again, we'd be very keen to give BDI some of that collateral so you can have on your system to support your partners and your other stakeholders to help their people skill up there.
And of course, we see this guide, Learning Directly, which, by the way, is free. Download it. There's so little in life that's free. We really should take advantage of it. But that we're also looking as sort of Learning Directly Mark II to bring together new examples from a wider range of corporates and from the public sector to start to develop an online resource where any corporate can turn to for examples of what their competitors are doing or their client base or whatever. And so if you've got a case study you'd like to share, please send it through to us and we'll come back to you in a few months and see what we've managed to compile. So unless there's another question, I think we're coming to the end of this webinar. Anybody else for a last minute comment or question before we sign off?
We have one question from the phone. It comes from Kate Vernon from Community Business. Please go ahead. Okay. Your line is open.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Kate, here you are, yes.
Okay.
Do you have a question?
First of all, I just wanted to say that I've been listening to this whole webinar and I want to congratulate all the panel for the fantastic work that you're doing. A lot of what you've been, so just to introduce myself, I work for an organization called Community Business. We're based in Hong Kong. We work with companies across Asia and very much looking to raise the profile of how disability impacts us all and that companies really need to be addressing this. And we've just had very similar discussions around the power of storytelling. Would love to explore how we can promote the This Is Me campaign in the Asia region. I think that would be really fascinating. We're also working very hard to encourage more companies to think about the role of employee networks and how that's really the way to kind of build the disability confidence from the inside out. And Susan, you'll know from the sessions that you've been involved in that there's too much focus really in Asia on the quotas and the numbers and the compliance, and we're really trying to help that shift to say, just as you've just said, that this is about driving best practice and it makes business sense. So I'd love to follow up with some of you afterwards to see how we can really get this storytelling and get some more examples out there. My question, I don't know whether we've got time because I know it's 1 minute, was going to be around, as we advise companies to launch networks, what's one of the best ways to just get that going? I mean, do you tend to recommend focusing on a particular issue to get people really, because one of the challenges we find is that it's such a broad topic. So is it best to try and start specific and then broaden it out to other stakeholders? Or any other advice around how to actually get networks off the ground?
A short answer, Kate. Lovely question. I would say what we call a lived experience focus group. So get a small group of people together, ask the question, what's working well around here in order that we can carry on doing that, and what do we need to improve as a business? And reach out, make it clear that you want to talk directly to disabled people, make it safe, make it confidential, And the heaven, it starts to happen. You know, you start to see the idea that a network would be advantageous and people will grab it. Neat question. And like you're thinking, Kate, about promoting storytelling. Lovely.
Great. What a nice way to end our session because I think our time has just died. We are done. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Paulette. Thank you for EY making it possible. And wherever you are, have a happy morning, evening, day. Take care. Yeah.